please help me welcome our speaker tonight. We have Eddie from the Northeast Club.
My name's Eddie. I'm an alcoholic. Nervous. Never get nervous. New group, I guess. But I'll keep everything in a bottle, but obviously most of us know where alcohol goes. And I was a bottom in a barrel drunk. Father dealt drugs growing up. Mother was hooked. Complete chaos all growing up. Guns. Father was shot when I was a couple months old. They tried to kick in the door. My grandparents stepped in and taught me to sit at the table and eat dinner. Wash my hands before I go in the fridge, those type of things. Aside from my grandmother, there really was no structure or upbringing. When I was 8 years old, my grandfather and me got in a U-Haul truck to go pick up my aunt. He had a heart attack next to me. And it was just me and my grandmother at that point. And I say that because he was the last one trying to keep some type of normalcy for me and my two sisters with my parents running amok. About a half a year later, my mother took us to South Jersey out of North Philly, and we moved in with my godmother, her sister. Got a little taste of family and normalcy there, played soccer, baseball, all that stuff. My mother never had a ninth grade education, so she was bagging groceries and doing stuff in the supermarket. She finally got an apartment, and we moved out on our own, and everything went completely downhill from there. Drinking. Stealing, you know, weed out of her purse and everything as a young kid. By middle school, drinking just about every morning if I get my hands on stuff. I guess by the time I was a freshman in high school, it was yard out, garbage head, anything I could get my hands on. Drinking every day. And all the things that help us drink more and all the things we have to take to help us come down from being on a load for 3-4 days. By 18, I was already in youth study center, already had a PO, stolen cars, running the streets. I guess I was 16 when my parents lived in two different states. Sorry about that. I'm a single father, 5 kids, so they think it's cute to blow me up right now. After I told them, don't call me, unless somebody's hurt. But 16 years old, I was on my own, sleeping on couches, renting rooms if I could. By 18, I was in Cherry Hill Crisis Center. First time somebody in an institution asked me if I had a problem drinking or a problem with alcohol and drugs. And I just said, get me out of here. I woke up in a white room, blood on the sheets, no handles, no doorknobs, no nothing. And when I sat down with the social worker, she said, you may not think you have an issue with your drinking, but your blood alcohol level, you still have about 12 more hours to go until your legal limit to be released. And I had already been there for about 9. I got in there at midnight. This was like 9:10 in the morning the next day. So I guess I had like a 0.4 alcohol level going in the building. And a lot of benzos. Again, keeping it in the bottle, but I was a blackout drunk. And that's what I did. I took sedatives coming off of a load. Smoked weed to try to hold my stomach together, but every day it was booze. And at that point, from 18 to about 25 years old, if I were to average it out, probably about 2 to 3 fifths of whiskey a day and all the amphetamines to help me do so. Driving record was horrendous. When I finally got sober and went to get my license reinstated, it cost me just under 10 grand 2 different times. That'll just tell you how my drinking is. I'm not going to glorify all the drinking and talk about all the great things that weren't great that left me, you know, on the side of the road half the time. Or in jail or in hospitals. I was in the restaurant business. And a friend of mine said, if you ever make it to Philly, you know, I'm in fine dining, blah, 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 come see me. By 25 years old, I had already shattered my skull, broke my neck. Been pronounced twice, and not even by ODs. just from reckless behavior. 45-50% of my liver was damaged, 3 holes in my stomach. I mean, we consider them ulcers, but I still see a upper GI doctor to this day, 19 years sober, because of the damage I did to my stomach and my esophagus. My sister called me, said they were having a party, said they needed some aid. Hey, I'll come, you know, drinking. I opened a fake bank account, deposited an empty envelope, withdrew money that wasn't mine, brought a couple outfits, threw some shit in a bag, went to Philly. Never left. Back home, you know. I got a job at the chart house down on Delaware Avenue. And I was sleeping on Penn's Landing and bathing in the sink, in the restroom, in the locker room. I weighed about 115 pounds. Made it about a year. Ended up in every horrible situation you can imagine. Doing things for money I never thought I'd do. Things that I wanted to kill myself over. Things with men, things with women. Just extorting people, you know, lying, manipulating. Drugs, money, alcohol, pay my tab, whatever. It didn't matter. A guy I knew was sober. Nobody in my family ever introduced me to AA or anything. Or recovery, for that matter. And I made a phone call. 3 guys pulled up in front of my house in an old pickup truck and took me to a meeting. I didn't know what a meeting was. I'm sitting there. I get to the end of the meeting. They say, is anybody in the room sitting on a drink or drug or have thoughts of anything that would lead to drinking? I raised my hand, and nobody else did. And I said, this is bullshit. 50 alcoholics sitting in the room and nobody wants to drink. I got to go. Not to mention, I'm sitting in a room full of roofers and bikers, and everybody's white, and I already feel alienated. I'm Irish and Puerto Rican. Irish Catholic on one side, got all my sacraments. Grew up in North Philly, all black family, all black neighbors, my stepmom, my brothers, aunts, uncles, everybody. The only person in the house that isn't black is me. And I just felt alienated, not to mention my grandmother goes to Catholic church and she, we'll say pagan, you know, a pagan Catholic, teaching me at 5 years old witchcraft. Like, you talk about never fitting in anywhere. You know what I mean? Like, how odd could I be trying to fit in places? Now I'm sitting in AA surrounded by white people who are Catholic, Irish, from Northeast Philadelphia. And I'm like, I'm so screwed. Like, I'm never going to get this. I left that meeting that night and the guy said, call me tomorrow if you're serious about getting help. He came up out front. I'm about 3 days without drinking for the first time in about 7-8 years. Haven't had a solid bowel movement in a couple years at this point, blood and water. Not to get graphic, but my stomach was gone. It was stripped. He took me to friends. I had no ID. And he said, say you're suicidal and left. I'm talking to the intake lady. I tell her I can't go on like this. She's like, you're just looking for 3 hots in a cot. And I'm like, what the hell is that? She said, I see no signs of suicide. She took my vitals and I was spiking. And she said, we're sending you to detox right now. And I got the charter Fairmont, and I was going into cardiac arrest because I hadn't taken any benzos or alcohol in 3 days. And within the next 6 hours, they had to put me down twice because I was seizing out. I'm looking at all the NA literature when I was in rehab, and it's saying, you know, we're powerless over mind and mood-altering substances, and I just got handed 15 pills for breakfast. Again, didn't understand. I had always excelled in academics and was ahead of the kids my age. And now I'm surrounded by people, in my mind, with a 4th grade reading level want to teach me how to live my life. Wasn't okay with that. I'm just being as honest as I can with where my mind was at, feeling like this wasn't going to work. That's the only reason I'm saying what I'm saying. I had passed every test put in front of me and failed life. And didn't have the balls to kill myself and didn't want to wake up. I heard a guy come in and talk about his drinking and it crushed me. Everything at that point was trying to, in my story, well, if I just drink beer, I'll never get drunk because of my tolerance. I won't do coke no more. I'll eat acid. That's not addictive. Well, ecstasy doesn't count. Well, I'll smoke wet. That's okay, right? Everything I tried to control my drinking never worked. I was about 3 days sober, and I called home, and I'm telling my sister, who I never got along with a day in my life, and I'm telling her about Bill W. and Dr. Bob. She's like, what the are you talking about? And I'm sitting there with no shoelaces, no belt, begging somebody to drop me off cigarettes, thinking to myself, I had not done anything in 3 days. I didn't wake up and not want to drink or get high anymore. I woke up and was walking to the bar, and I saw a guy putting food on a grill with his dog sitting next to him that he was going to make for his family. I saw a husband and a wife pushing a stroller, walking their dog with a child in a stroller, thinking, wow, they go to work. They have a family. Like, they have a life. They have somewhere to live without somebody saying, you can't come here tonight. And then I saw a bunch of kids and people throwing a football in a field. If anybody's familiar with Philly, this all happened at one time at Torsdale and Cotman, across the street from the hell's the Catholic school right there? They're Bambies. I don't know. Yeah, St. Hubert's. Very good. Thank you. And that's when I had made the call that night to get help. Finally, I just didn't know what help entailed. So 40 days later, I get released. And I go home, and I try to take the meds that they just filled the bag with. And I took them wrong. And I couldn't breathe. My chest tightened up. My ears were burning. I took the wrong blood pressure. I don't know what the hell I took. I threw it all away. Smart, right? Probably needed half of it. And I said, I got to go to a meeting. And my sister said, well, you know you're not allowed to go to the bar first. I'll go with you. She's been sober since that day. She has exactly 40 days less sober than me. And just celebrated 19 years a couple weeks ago. My sober story is insane. At 10 months sober, I found out I had a son. I went to go visit him. I was visiting for about 2 years, and then his mother turned up missing. Couch to couch, got in trouble, dating drug dealers. Kids get taken. I get a phone call years later. Meanwhile, I meet a girl. And I have a daughter. At 3 months old, she leaves, takes my daughter. I'm fighting for her. I meet another girl. Very briefly after meeting, she's pregnant, and I'm like, all right, we'll say it's mine. He's born. Name him after me. Raising him. She relapses because of the C-section, the opiates. We go back to find out why she's still bleeding. And they tell her she's pregnant with twins. Meanwhile, she just got implanted with Mirena, which is an IUD birth control, which I managed to have twins on. And briefly after, she's still using because of the opiates. I get a phone call while I'm food shopping that my son is not mine. This gentleman had never had any kids. I opened my door so he could learn how to be a dad. And he did everything right by this child while she had relapsed, and a lot I didn't see, maybe a lot I didn't want to see. And he did the best he knew, and he removed him and got full custody. I came home from work, my son was gone. He is an excellent father. I am still in that child's life. I love both of them dearly. For keeping my twins and their brother in touch all these years. And thank God for sobriety and the people that taught him how to live to accept me in his son's life. So now I'm fighting for my twins who never left my side. Their mother has been in and out of their life since they were about 3 months old. She now resides in Florida. I was fighting for my daughter for 10 years, who I finally got when she was 10 years old. She is 16 now, and a pain in my ass. And when my son was about 8, I got a phone call that they were put in a foster home, And when I went and fought for him, his five-year-old brother was with him, and I had to fight for him, and I won. As a single white father adopting a young black male, doesn't go well in the court system, but I won. So now I have my twins and my boys currently fighting for my 10-year-old daughter. I win. Now I have five kids. Sober. Single. Losing my mind. I wouldn't change a day of it. I've had so many important people in my life push me to keep fighting for my kids, pushing me to tell me that I'm doing the best that I can. My alcoholism doesn't show up in a bottle or a bag anymore. It tells me I'm a shitty father, shitty son, shitty brother. Horrible boss, bad employee. Very arrogant, very cocky. I'll always be alone. That's how my alcoholism shows up today, when I'm not practicing what I was taught. Being powerless and unmanageable was really easy for me to hold on to coming into the program. I knew I was powerless and my life was completely unmanageable. Now that I'm not using, I thought that I could manage my life the way I always managed things and it didn't work. Hence, 50 kids running around, you know. Anything to take me out of myself, you know. Relationships felt good. Somebody's going to love me for who I'm trying to act like I am. Doesn't work either. I'm taking myself through the steps because I don't trust anybody because I'm waiting for somebody to come in wearing the sandals of Christ. He never showed up. And mind you, being pounded with Catholicism and making all my sacraments and this white beard, white cloud God that I never felt I related to, I'm told that that's the only way I'm going to be able to get and stay sober. But what I held on to for anybody struggling with a higher power was 50 people sitting in a room not drinking and not wanting to drink and hearing the promises read for the first time and realizing that my head would eventually shut up if I did what they told me to do. I held on to that with dear life. I wanted my head to stop. I wanted to be happy. I wanted to accept who I was, whether I voiced it or showed it or not. I wanted to be accepted whether I act like it or not, whether I act like I cared or not. Meanwhile, the restaurant that I was bathing in the basement sink, the management team gets fired. I get put through a growth program. I'm now running a $5 million restaurant sober, running a bar, raising children. I almost had a nervous breakdown. It had nothing to do about being around the booze. It was the stress, it was the hours, it was the not being home to get dinner on the table, it was not knowing what my children's mother was doing when she was in the house, robbing us, stealing us. I mean, there was a point in my sobriety, and I don't recommend this for anybody, this is just my honesty. The abnormal becomes so normal that I'm sober, sitting in a meeting with Suboxone in one pocket to get her off a dope, weed in this one to help her eat, and Clonopin in the back pocket to get her off the Xannies, and I'm sober, wondering why I'm so irritable, restless, and discontent. Wondering why I'm two-stepping the program, just staying sober and trying to help people, and not keeping my battery charged. I was a dead battery trying to charge batteries, wondering why I was losing my mind, and taking accountability for everybody that wasn't making it when I was being a real shitty example of what AA had to offer. I'm carrying around this flag like I'm the best single parent ever because I'm coaching baseball and football and I'm a dance dad and my kids won't even speak to me. You know? As I'm taking myself through the steps, I get to We Agnostics and I don't need to read that chapter. Because your God ain't going to work for me. And if it is your God, I've already broken all of his rules except for one. And he sure as hell ain't going to do nothing for me. I had somebody tell me, say the third step prayer on my knees in the corner of a meeting until I felt something. I had no idea what I was reading. I kept reading it over and over again. It made no sense. Because I'm doing this by myself. Now I'm writing a fourth step, wondering why I want to die, for real. No blinders, no numbing agent, just the piece of crap that I had become. Not cute. A buddy of mine walks in, says, you still got that four step on you? I say, yeah. He says, let's go for a drive. We sit in the car, he grabs my four step, he throws it in the back seat, and I'm like, what the fuck? What are you doing? You know how long that took to write? And he said, I want you to tell me the stuff you didn't write down, because that's the stuff that's making you not want to get up and live your day. And he was right. There was three big ones on there, man. Number one, resentment. Father. Beat and raped my mother in front of me when I was a child. Used to lock her in bedrooms for 3 days at a time. Me and my mother used to sit with our backs to the door, and we'd sing to each other until he'd let her out. At like 5, 6 years old, I'm climbing out of 2-story windows down drain pipes to call for help, to call my grandfather to come let her out. He's gone, you know, after he died. So yeah, biggest resentment. The guy who's taking me through the steps says, so your dad wasn't the dad you wanted. I'm like, no shit. He said, well, were you the son that he wanted? I said, what the hell does that have to do with anything? He said, everything. You're the one getting sober, not him. You're a jerk off. He said, you never beat a woman? I said, no. He said, I got your harm done list right here. You never threw your sister across the room? I said, that does not count. He said, tell that to a judge. It's assault and battery. He said, you never took advantage of a woman? I said, no. He said, I got your sexual conduct right here. You never woke up next to somebody and don't remember nothing? I said, yeah, but so did they. Doesn't make it right. Tell that to a judge. I'm like, this dude's a real piece of work. I was molested growing up by a family member. I mean, I can go on and on and on about like how bad it was, but all these things aid me in helping people today who don't think anybody else has been where they were at and are not comfortable talking about it, which is why I don't care at this point. The things I did for money, the things that happened to me, the way I blamed everybody for my poor life. I have a great life today. I have no more excuses. I have no more regret. They say bring the body and the mind will follow. My perspective changed at that point when I realized I had hated my father for all these things I thought he was, and I basically became the same man. And I wanted to be forgiven for the person that I had become. I had to forgive him. 2 days later, I get called out of work on a Friday night in a $5 million restaurant. If any of you have ever been in the restaurant business, you do not get off Friday nights. And my father says, we'll be in Frankfurt. The family wants to see you. Come down and say hi. My whole life, whenever running into him, he always was, I'm glad I left your mother. She's a piece of work. She was always stealing my stash. I had to get my life together. All these excuses to help him sleep at night. When I told him that I was sorry for not making him a proud father, he broke. I'm not saying your amends will go this way. I'm saying that he apologized for destroying our family. He apologized for not being an example of a father. He apologized for not fighting harder to be better for us. He's the only amends that I made that went this well. Everybody else told me to go screw myself. But me and him have a relationship today. It's not the childhood father-son relationship, but we're adults, and every time he sees me, he tells me how proud he is of the father I've become without his help. And I don't feel good that he feels regret and remorse. I don't feel happy about that. Like, haha, good for you. You should feel like shit. I'm honored that he has something to be proud of. Truly. And my kids know him as Papa, not who I know him as. My kids know my mother, Helen, as Mama. Not the person who said, you're allowed to get high and drunk in the house as long as you give me some and you're not running the street. I mean, our biggest argument was, like, you're wasting it, you're not shooting it. Like, that was never a mother. My kids don't know that. You know, they know my mom sits on the couch and is very inappropriate with her jokes. That's all they know about mom. And I love it that they're in my kids' lives. So they say bring the body and the mind will follow. You do a thorough fourth and a fifth, and your perspective changed. It's easy to know what your resentments are because we all know how easy it is to blame people for how we feel. Once I realized that almost every single resentment I had hurt these people as well. It didn't matter if I hurt them once or their 100 times of hurting me. I had to clean my side of the street, and then I had to go over to their house and pick up the shit I threw in their lawn as well. It was a dump truck upheaval of garbage that I had to let go of in order for spirit to come into my heart. I started to have a spiritual awakening at that point, because at that point I didn't feel alone in a room full of people. I didn't feel alone when I was at home by myself. I didn't have a relationship with my higher power yet, but I didn't feel alone, and I knew something was out there, and it wasn't 50 people sitting in a room. Now that I'm aware of my defects of character and what they are, all God-given instincts done in excess have the power to kill. Procreate, financial security, rest, eating, being attracted to somebody. We can go on and on and on about all these God-given instincts, but as we look at them and we put them in excess, they're all the seven deadly sins, according to a lot of faiths. And that's what I was all of the time. All or nothing. It wasn't I'm attracted to you. It was lust. It wasn't let me make enough money to get by. It was greed. Everything was envy. Everything was anger and wrath. Like, that's, I was extreme. I'm an alcoholic and a drug addict. And when we fall short and act out on these defects of character, those are our shortcomings. And every step prepares us for the next step. Like, I have to be powerless and unmanageable and really accept it. Step one is two chapters in the big book. We read Bill's story after we read the doctor's opinion, because we usually make it to the doctor first. Now we're in chapter one and we read how this guy's life, young life, if you do the research, was horrible. Bill W's young adult life and childhood. He was smart. He knew how to make money. It didn't matter. Now we got chapters two and three devoted to step one. Now we have chapter four devoted to step two. Now we're in chapter five and we're barely at step three at reading how it works in every meeting. And I hear people go into meetings and after making three meetings, just getting out of detox in a recovery house, they're right in the fourth step wondering why they're ready to jump off the Golden Gate Bridge. There's four chapters of information before you start to dig in that. There's four chapters of turning it over to a higher power that you're no longer doing it for yourself. There's four chapters of awareness and acceptance that have to happen before you start to list what's wrong with you in your eyes, before somebody else shows you how screwed up you really are. It's a lot of information. Now we're in How It Works, Chapter 5. You say the third step prayer, we're right in our fourth step. Now it's into action, chapter 6. In that chapter are steps 6 through 11. There is no stopping at this point. You have to keep going. It built us, it built us, it built us all the way up. Because if you're doing a fourth step and you're truly jammed up and terrified of doing this, I highly suggest you revisit the third step, because we turn our thinking and our actions over to the care of God as we understood it. And if we're truly doing it for our higher power, we should be eager to get this garbage out so that he has room or she to come into us, whatever your higher power may be. I'm lucky I have three. I have spirit, I have a god and a goddess. I'm really screwed up. Being aware of my defects of character didn't mean that they went away. I became willing to have God remove these defects of character. I became willing first. And then I humbly begged him or her to remove them. Because when I fall short and act out on these defects is when I go into my old behaviors. And they don't go away. And sometimes some go to get put to rest and then others crop up. And it's like a big revolving door, depending on how I'm living my program. Then we have this list that we did in our fourth and fifth. And I had to become willing to make amends for them all. I thought I was going to take vacation and hunt all these people down and knock on doors and tell everybody, my bad, I'm sorry, look at me now, I'm doing great. It's not how it went. To make an amends is to fix what's broken, mend, and put back together. And I had to repair the damage I'd done. And it sucked facing these people for the garbage that I threw into their lives. But I was willing first. And then I made the attempt wherever possible. And trust me when I tell you, these people popped out of the woodwork, man. Like before social media, before trackers and phones and all this shit, people were just coming into my life left and right, and I had to face all of it. Nightmare. But I'm better for it. That brings me to the maintenance part of this program. 10, 11, and 12. The 10th step is going through your day, laying down at night for me, and looking at where I was acting like a jerk off, and when I overreacted, and when I didn't hear somebody out, and when I jumped to conclusions, and when I got egotistical, and when I thought my way was the only way, and when I just treated people the way I wanted to without any recourse or remorse. And if I'm looking at how I'm acting, I'm identifying my defects of character and my shortcomings. I'm making a daily inventory. And when I'm wrong, I'm promptly admitting it. That is 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 every day. That's your 10th step. And the 11th step, through prayer and meditation, we try to improve and grow and practice our relationship with our higher power. That has been evolving since the day I got sober. And I've taken steps back and I've taken steps forward. I never picked up the first drink. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, not some of them, not half of them, I carry this message to people that still suffer. What I do in a day for AA, I owe to AA. Anybody comes up to me for help. I don't use the word sponsorship because it's nowhere in the first 164 pages of the book. It says trusted friend, closed-mouth acquaintance, and spiritual advisor. Sponsors get hired and fired. And I can tell you the garbage that I was carrying with me that I would not write on that fourth step, I was not telling to a sponsor. I told to a friend. Somebody that I trusted because I didn't trust people. I keep that in mind when I befriend people today and they're like, I'm ready to get in the steps, I'm ready to go. Because I was the guy swinging the big book around with a couple years sober saying, if you don't do this, you're going to die. And people are like, oh, hold on, buddy. Now, did you eat today? Where are you sleeping? You need a pack of smokes. Let's go get a cold coffee. Let's talk. Let me tell you how screwed up I am sober so you don't feel alone like I did. Let me tell you how screwed up my spiritual views are so you don't feel like you don't have one. And then a friendship's built. And then people start telling you things about themselves. And then the work can be done. When somebody is properly armed with facts about themselves, then and only then can they win the entire confidence of an alcoholic in just a few hours. I hold on to that dearly, and I keep that in the back and in the front of my mind every time I'm encountering somebody in AA. Now, the work I do outside of AA, when anyone anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA to be there, and for that I'm responsible. I do a lot of work outside the rooms that I don't talk about in the rooms. I do that for my higher power. You know, my kids will be in the car and somebody will come up and ask me for change and the kids will be like, oh, here we go. I'm not giving you any money. What got you out here? Why do you think this is your solution? See, people make it to the program, whether you're suffering or not, whether you're irritable, restless, and discontent sitting in AA, there is a solution and it's right behind me. And find somebody that knows this literature and they're properly armed with facts about themselves and they know how they got better. Like, I came into AA and they said, find somebody you want what they have and ask them how to get it. I didn't want what you had. Tell me how you got what you had and I want to go get my own. I'm not going to go to somebody that in my mind I think beats his wife and ask him for relationship advice. I'm not going to go to somebody that doesn't pay child support and ask him how to take care of my kids. I have a board of trustees. I have several people that I go to on a daily basis. I have a network of people that I trust in. They are friends to this day. Wow. I can talk, boy. There's a little bit of time left. Usually they're telling me to shut up. I can't explain how grateful I am for what AA and my higher powers have done for me. A couple months ago, I wasn't making meetings. My prayer was upside down. I was very rebellious. I got news that one of my oldest children was hurting my daughters, and I had to ask them to leave. Forcefully, and it wasn't cute. I'm very protective over the women in my life. You heard what my mother went through. She lives 2 minutes away from me, and I still take care of her to this day. I'll never let anybody hurt my daughters, and I feel like I failed them. It broke me, and I had a nervous breakdown, and I wasn't talking to people, and I wasn't praying, and I wasn't doing what I was taught. My sister got into a car accident, the one I don't get along with, called me, and I couldn't even talk because of how hard I was crying. I'm a general contractor. By the way, oh yeah, I left the restaurant business. You can't raise kids and run restaurants at the same time. If anybody was wondering, it doesn't work well. So I had to build a business, which, thank God, my gods, it's going well. but I'm able to get food on the table every night. I'm able to drop the girls off at dance. I'm able to coach baseball and football. I'm able to do all these things. But I wasn't doing any of it when my world fell apart, and I wasn't in AA. And I knew I couldn't drink and do that to them because I'm all they have. And I knew I couldn't kill myself because I'd leave them with nothing. I had already faced that a year prior when I went to the doctor's appointment and wanted to know why my heartburn was so bad. I have to currently get tested every 2 years now for esophagus cancer, and I'm on a whole bucket of meds, the thing that I chewed, that I said I would never do. I got to take meds every day now. The 3 holes in my stomach turned into 13 and stripped my esophagus, all the stomach acid, from all the drinking. My liver's 100%, so stop drinking, you'll get better with your liver. But the stomach, not so much. My sister called me, and she said, I'll meet you at your house. And she knew I wasn't in a good spot, and immediately took my keys off me, opened my gun safe, and took my firearms. And took me to a meeting. Actually, that was like 5-6 months ago. Since then, my meeting attendance is back. My prayer is good. I have commitments out the ass. I'm a key holder. I have 2 home groups. I have guys and girls all over the place that I'm taking through this program, through the steps. I understand they say men with the men and women with the women. And if you're honestly being right with your motives, anybody can help anybody on any given day. And I keep that in mind when I saw my sister come into AA and couldn't find a strong woman who was knowledgeable of the literature to take her through the steps. And I watched a group of old guys build a wall around her and protect her. And she's sober to this day because of them guys. We just buried her sponsor 2 weeks ago. And it was devastating to watch her lose her best friend. But I keep that in mind when the young girl comes in beaten and broken and can't find women. And I hold on to her long enough to put her in the hands of other good women, because there are some. I have 2 female sponsees at this point, that one has 10 years and one has 14 years. And once I can get some of these young women calm and willing to trust other women, because a lot of women don't trust women coming in here. It's apparent to me. I see it every day. And then I put her in the hands of the women that can help her and be there for you, because you're not going to call me and tell me that you're going nuts because your period's coming, because I don't want to hear it. Tell the girls. No, I just joke. Trust me, my girls come to me, my daughters, all the time, and I'm like, here we go. I make myself available today, and I fought God's will for a long time because I would hear people say, I'm living God's will today, and it feels great, and this and that. I'd be like, you're full of shit. Like, did you get a memo, a text, a letter? How do you know what God, I don't even understand what God or my higher power is on any given day. How do you know what he or she wants you to do? And it took the old guys in the back of the room that I didn't like, that I didn't listen to, that I judged, who finally said to me, do you know what God's will isn't? And I said, yeah. And they said, stop doing all that shit. Stop lying, cheating, manipulating, and trying to sleep with every girl that comes into the damn meeting. Maybe you'll stop having kids. Again, I'm only saying this because it's my story, and I don't live like that today, but these are the things that I was trying to fill that hole and that void with, because they made me feel good at the time. And I wouldn't change any of it. I wouldn't change the fact of any of my kids. I love them all, even the ones that aren't mine. But the things that I was putting priority-wise in front of AA were the things that were blocking me from getting better with myself and causing all the chaos in my life. The people that I didn't want to listen to and the people that I was smashing in my mind every meeting, they were the people that saved my life. They were the ones that became my closest friends. So if you're sitting in here and that one person's always saying the shit to you that you really don't want to hear, try to listen to it. It's probably saving your life and you don't realize it. I don't know. I've known Shay a long time, and I was honored that she came up to speak for me last week, because it's hard to find, where we live, women that carry themselves with honor and dignity, you know, and take care of their kids and show up, especially in my world. When I'm raising 5 kids by myself, or asking me where their mother is half the time. So when I do see women that show up and walk with honor and dignity, I try to show them to the women that don't have a role model, that don't have an example. And then she asked me to come out here, and how could I say no? I was completely honored. And seems like a great group of people, and I hope if somebody heard one thing tonight that helped them, then I did my job. That's all I got. Thank you.
Thanks again, Eddie. Great message. Okay, tonight we have a couple home group members that would like to come up and say a little something about. I'll let them come up and say what they need to say. I think Lauren, are you coming up? Okay.
Thanks. Hi, everybody. I'm Lauren. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. Eddie, thanks so much for your talk. Thank you for coming out here tonight, and thank you for your talk. I really enjoyed listening to it. So I just wanted to make a quick announcement. I guess, like, probably there weren't that many new people here, so probably a lot of people know our home group member, Rich, Tree Rich. He was, like, very involved in this group for many years before I was here, and that was like close to 12 years ago that I came here, and he was here before that. But he passed away yesterday, and he passed away not of alcoholism and not of drug addiction. He passed away sober, and a couple of us just wanted to say a couple things. So I just wrote like a small paragraph, because if I do it ad lib, I will be like mushy and crying and like not organized. So I just wanted to tell this like little story about him. So I wrote, I'd like to say a few words about my friend Rich. I first met Rich about 12 years ago, and we continue to stay friends over all this time, because we were in the same home groups. We were in this same home group together, him and I, for all these years. And I think you develop this thing with people that you're in a home group with, a friendliness and a connection and stuff. So him and I developed that. We got into a tradition of Rich giving me my anniversary coin here at this group every year. So it was like our little tradition that he would give when I had my sober date. He would give, like, say a little thing and give me my coin. And he always had the most beautiful things to say about me. And I think that's because he, like, watched me come in here all messed up. And he watched me, like, transform as a result of nothing that I did but the 12 steps and sponsorship in AA. And So when he would give me my coin for my anniversary, he would often give me, like, one of his previous coins. So, because he was, like, 5 years more sober than I was. So when I had 10 years, he had already had 10 years, you know, a few years before that. So he would pass along his coin to me. And last year, during COVID, like on my anniversary, a letter came in my mailbox from him with his 11-year coin. So this year I plan on giving him a coin for his anniversary, because he was like excited to come here to get his 17-year coin. So So I got him this coin, so I wanted to, like, give it to him in spirit. And he celebrated 17 years on the 28th of September. So a few days ago, he celebrated 17 years. And the coin that I got him has, like, the 17 Roman numeral, the Roman numeral 17 on it. And it has the inscription, it was only a matter of being willing to believe in a power greater than myself. I stood in the sunlight at last. So Rich got his 17 years, and I'd like to congratulate him in spirit. So.
Thank Thank you so much, Lauren. And I believe Mickey would like to come up.
What's up, everybody? My name's Mickey. I'm an alcoholic. Eddie, that was phenomenal, man. Speaking from the heart. Oh, nice. Thanks for the lighter, dude. You said a lot of things that, of course, I was thinking about Rich the entire time. And you said a lot of things that he said to me. So, like Lauren, I won't build a resentment against you because I never got to get his old coins because he was giving them to you, okay? So he would buy me new ones, I guess, right? And tell me that they were his old ones, right? So thank you. Now that he's up there, the joke's on me. I appreciate it. The truth of the matter is, Rich didn't have a sponsor for a long time. And when I came into the rooms, he showed me this way to live, right? And then he got to present people with coins all the time. And he's got multiple sponsees, and we would all give him coins. So God knows how many he has for each year, right? But he didn't have a sponsor to give him any one. So I was honored and blessed. He had asked me once, because that's what Rich would tell me to do things. And that's one of the things he told me, like, you're going to come up to the podium and you're going to present me with a coin, then you're going to sit down so that I can talk. And that's what I would do. And it was funny, because I'm riding up here, I was super excited to present him with his coin as well. And, I was like, I'm not going to break down and cry. He'd be pissed if I did that. So like, what would Rich do? He'd tell me to just shut up, and sit down. But the truth of the matter is this complete stranger came into my life 9 years ago when I was broken, destroyed, and didn't have a way to live. And he told me I wasn't smart enough to take myself through the book. So good for you, Eddie. And he brought me through and he showed me how to live. And, it touches me every year to say that because, one day at a time, these things start building up and I got a couple kids. I don't have five. I have a bunch of my sponsees feel like my kids, but, they're really not. And I will tell you this about Rich, because he's probably touched every one of your lives and you probably don't know or you do know. And, it's cool to be sad. It's all right to cry. But I want you to realize and I want you to be happy and grateful that God put Rich into your life. Because that man lived and breathed AA. Dr. Bob's prescription for life was to trust God, clean house, and help others. I don't know how many people can make a sole vocation of helping people, but this man did. I never once in the 9 years ever saw him put work or money or anything in front of recovery, ever. And he passed that on to me, and I've now been able to very gratefully pass that on to other people. And that's what he did, and that's what he showed me. And, unfortunately, I don't have the 17-year coin right now because I was fortunate enough to be able to give it to him at his bedside, and that was really cool. But I will tell you this. I'm holding a 24-hour coin in my pocket for Rich. And whenever happens, whatever happens, I will put this with him. But this is what it's about. It's about 24 hours. It's not about what we have. But that gentleman just took the 13th step. It's not what all of you think. It's not that rehab joke. It's not that. The 13th step of Alcoholics Anonymous, what Rich told me was you die sober. And that man died sober, helping people. I sat in that hospital room watching all these people get help from somebody laying in a bed. All right? He said to me once, the day after my anniversary, he said, "Yo, I forgot your anniversary." And I said, "I know." And he goes, Well, it's just another day, bro. And you have today. It's all about 24 hours. All right, so I didn't get to give him his coin on his anniversary last Tuesday. He's not here tonight, but he is certainly with us. And I just want all of you to realize this. I want you to just think about it. That this man passed on so much good stuff to people, and it will go on forever. All right? As long as we get up and we do the next right thing and help somebody out. All right? Tree Man will, he'll be forever in our hearts. You know, and if you wake up and do the next right thing tomorrow, man, he'll be up there smiling at you. I promise you that. He is not a soft, cuddly man unless you are a young, beautiful woman. Okay? If you know Rich, you know that's true. I was riding up with Dave up here and I was like, he wasn't, I love how people talk about how he was nice. He was not nice to me. He was not nice to the men in the program. But my kids used to call him Uncle Rich. I am that sponsee. If you know him, I am that sponsee that he came to live with. You know, it was supposed to be for a couple days. It was 2 years and 3 months. But that's how Rich did things, man, you know. Trust God, clean house, and help others, man. You're going to be all right. That dude died sober with 17 years. So if we could just have a moment of silence for him real quick. And I would love to have a huge applause to congratulate Rich for 17 years. Love you, buddy. Congratulations, Rich.
All right, thanks, guys, for coming up. The group would also like... Oh, I'm sorry, Mike.
Mike, I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Eddie. Thank you, Mickey. Thank you, Lauren, for your kind words. I'm so grateful to have Tree in my life. When I was going through the book with Mickey at the time, Tree was living with Mickey, and he would come stumbling home late at night, and it would just overjoy him to see someone at the kitchen table reading the book with somebody. You know, it's questionable. I think there's one thing that Rich loved more than bass fishing, than climbing trees and all those other crazy things that Rich had, and that was this group, man. Feet first. Rich was here from the start. And, you know, as I was thinking about it, and I know it could be tough for some of us, and I understand. I don't think there's any better way to close this out than to hear from him himself and tell you about what this meeting means to him. So I've isolated about 5 minutes of audio, and I'd like to play that now. And just think about what he's talking about and what this fellowship has built up around him. And what this did for his life. And it's not his story, it's the story of this meeting. So I hope everyone enjoys.
Dramatic pause. Oh, you know, you can't be a presenter, the tech guy, or, you
know. My name is Rich, and I'm an alcoholic. I have been working on this system. I just kind of want to go over some of the people who paved the path for me, if you will, and looked at us to when this group started back when I was six. I tried writing this on the computer this afternoon. I read it, has changed the format on the word, so this is really bad. Anyway, somewhere in the Baltimore area, back in the 60s or 70s, I don't know if it's quite a bit, there was this Zen truck driver who had like a fifth grade education. His name was Wally. And along came this hot-headed businessman by the name of Tom Flynn in August of 1980. And Tom met Wally, and Wally, or Tom got sober and stayed sober. And then this ex-Navy pilot, Steve F., showed up in Baltimore. I hadn't had a drink in about 6 or 7 years. He was dying from untreated alcoholism. He met Tom and went through the work and got a reprieve. And Tom and Steve worked together for quite some time in 1996. They formed a group called the Harbor City Speakers Group and ran with that for a while. This is kind of cool. Steve and Steve, who was from Boston originally, caught wind of the snorted up, drunken, psycho, soon-to-be ex-lawyer friend from Boston who needed help. And Steve just happened to be heading up in New England and picked up this man, and they took a trip around New England and went through some step work. And Dave Perry got sober. 2001, a year. Anyway, about a year later, Steve headed back up to Boston to celebrate Dave's 1 year anniversary and runs into this totally psycho crank up roaming the streets of Boston by the name of Greg Howard. And Greg managed to get through the work with Steve Farnsworth and got sober. And moved back to New York where Steve was living at the time. These dates might not be very specifically accurate, but they're close enough. Greg started doing what Greg did, and he did a great job out in New York. He moved to Philly eventually, and eventually got a job up here in Eaglesville, and moved there and started doing his deal in the Perkins County, Perkinsey area, where somewhere around 03, maybe early 04, ran into a young contractor who had been sober a handful of years, who was dying from untreated alcoholism. This gentleman got together with Greg Howard and had his recruit. His name is Chris. This is kind of a cool part. They were hanging around the Quakertown, Proxy area in April of 05. This extremely angry, untreated tree man shows up in the break in the basement of the church, and myself, and I met Greg, heard Greg's story, asked Greg if he would help. He did. I got my reprieve. And we started doing the deal with Quakertown. And Chris and Greg got together one night and said, we got to start a meeting. And we talked to Steve, and we found a church, and on the 27th of March, 2006, this group was born. And it's kind of neat that I'm still here. I think it's totally amazing. You know, so many people have come into the path of this group. Bob, I'm from this meeting. Sarah, just bunch of beautiful people throughout the course of these 8 years have come and helped this meeting to grow. And I have just seen hundreds and hundreds of people come here, find a sponsor, do the work, get some, stay some, and help others to do the same. I can't thank you enough for coming out tonight. Awesome message as always. We've had roughly 415 speakers here since 2006, which is kind of cool. None of them were fired or sent home early. And that's pretty much in a nutshell how we first started. I'm glad you're all here tonight. I'm glad that everyone who's come here through the course of the past 8 years. We've all been hanging around a while. It's just been a wonderful experience. I hope people keep coming back and seeing the things as well. Thanks.